mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can claw. And you don't want to see inside of my... Chapter 34. In the middle of the night, curled up next to Appa was the best place to be. For sleeping, or if you had to think. Aang didn't really want to think, but, well, want to seemed to get lost a lot ever since the monks had told him he was the Avatar, which just wasn't fair. And nobody else seemed to think that it wasn't fair, that it wasn't fair, which didn't make any sense. And he couldn't ask Toph because she'd make it another lesson. And he couldn't ask Katara because she'd try to make it all better. And he didn't want her to make it better. Well, no. He kind of did, but he had this itchy feeling that making it better wasn't making it fixed. And he just didn't know what to do. Frustrated beyond measure, Aang thumped his fist on the ground. Gah! Aang grinned sheepishly as Sokka pinned a sleepy glare on him, sleeping bag half raised by bent earth. Sokka, can I talk to you a minute? Blue eyes blinked at him, eyed Katara, blissfully dead to the world in her own bag, turned an eye to Toph, who seemed to smirk even in her sleep. If she was sleeping. Aang wasn't quite sure. Narrowed his gaze and slowly scanned the starlit forest around them, as Sokka tilted an ear to listen for any trace of things moving that shouldn't be. Why'd you have to call it Boots? Aang wondered, a little cross. I could have come up with a better name. Why'd Toph have to call it anything at all, was what he really wondered. Gyatso had talked about spirits a couple of times, and one of the things that Aang remembered from that was that names were important. The moon and the ocean had names. Ko had a name. Now this thing had a name. That just couldn't be good. But name or not, everything was quiet. For now. Rolling his eyes towards the stars, Sokka gently scooped Momo up and off to the side against Katara, gathered up his sleeping bag and moved around to the other side of Appa, giving the drowsing bison an absent pat. So what's up? A thousand things tumbled through Aang's head. He let the first one fall out of his mouth. Why are you sure the Fire Lord's going to have the Yuyan at the invasion? I'm not. I kind of hope he doesn't, Sokka said, blinking himself more awake. But it'd be dumb if we didn't plan for it. They caught you once. So what? Aang said crossly. So did those pirates. When they had Katara to lure us in, not the same. Zhao almost got us a couple of times. Not sure you noticed, but Zhao got munched by an angry fish spirit monster, Sokka pointed out wryly. He's kind of not available. Boomy did it by slipping funky rock rings on us when you couldn't earthbend. That's not going to work now. Aang frowned. Arrows still will. Oh, come on, Aang burst out. Even Zuko caught me, and the Fire Lord's not going to have him there. All the way awake now, Sokka gave him a long look. Even Zuko, huh? Well, Aang shrugged, feeling oddly itchy again under that stare. It's not like he's that hard to beat. Sokka didn't say anything. I did it with a mattress once. A mattress? Sokka said warily. On the ship, the first day he showed up. Aang grinned. Boy, did he ever look mad. I didn't see a mattress when you washed all those soldiers off the deck, Sokka pointed out. Well, no, Aang admitted, confused. He was down, though, and I was gliding away to catch up with you guys, and then he jumped after me. What? Sokka sighed and dropped down to thump the mossy ground by Appa's side. Come on, buddy. We need to talk. Well, that's what I said, but... Aang folded himself down by Sokka, worried. What's wrong? Sokka wrapped blankets around himself, getting comfortable next to Appa's warm fur. eyed Aang again with a look of sympathy. You never really got into a fight with other guys when you were growing up, did you? A fight? Aang echoed, not sure where this was headed. We had practice and sparring. The older students could get a little rough sometimes. Well, that's what Gyatso said anyway. We didn't see them much. He grinned. Air nomads. Gyatso always said teenagers needed to roam around and get it out of their system. And the younger grown-up monks could use their energy to keep them out of trouble. Elders stayed at the temples. And kids. So you never really saw a fight, like us against Zuko, Sokka concluded. No, Aang exclaimed, surprised Sokka could even think that. Who'd want to do that? Guys fight sometimes, Sokka said plainly. Girls, too, when they get really mad. Though Gran-Gran usually got that stopped quick. Aang, when you're in a fight, you're not beaten until you go down and stay down. But Zuko doesn't. Unless we fly off or he gets hit by a paralyzing tongue or Katara buries him under ice after he's already walked through a blizzard. No, he doesn't, Sokka agreed. Speaking of ice, you know what that finishing move of Paku's really does, don't you? I know what a finishing move is. Aang shook in place a little, suddenly deeply angry. He wasn't an idiot. He didn't care what Zuko thought. Zuko had hurt the best, most wonderful person he'd ever met. What did it matter what Zuko thought? Why do you think I never froze anybody like that? That's a horrible thing to teach somebody, even if you're just using it on a waterbender and they can melt it back if they think about it. What if they get too scared to think? I do. Silence. Sokka was looking at him, eyes wide and surprised. Sometimes I do, Aang admitted. I'm learning it from Katara because I have to. I'm the Avatar. I have to master waterbending, even when I never, ever want to do that to anybody. He shivered. Airbending doesn't have a finishing move. We're not like that. We respect life. We don't eat meat. We don't kill people. We don't have evil people. And that was the wrong thing to say. He just knew it. Must be pretty lonely sometimes, Sokka said quietly. Lonely? Aang said quickly, feeling his heart do a kind of funny stab, like it was trying to get somewhere else. Why would I be lonely? I've got Appa and Momo and you guys. Sokka leaned forward, away from warm fur. Yeah, but it's not the same. When we were at the North Pole, he looked toward the sky, where moonlight filtered softly down through new leaves. They were water tribe, but they weren't our tribe. They were different. He let out a resigned breath. Aang, this kind of doesn't make me sound like the best guy, but I think you ought to know what really ticked me off about Han. Besides him thinking Yue was just a perk, Sokka almost growled at the thought, shook his head, and sighed. He just said I was a back ice rube who didn't know anything about the political complexities of their kind of life. And you know what? He was right. That's not right, Aang protested, hands flying as if he could push away the ache in Sokka's eyes. You're a great guy. But I'm not that kind of guy, Sokka said bluntly. I'm not like Chief Arnok, fancy words and moving like all those fancy furs are made out of iron. And just looking all sober and sad over Yue. She was his daughter and he just sits there. My dad would cry, maybe later, after he knew the rest of us were safe, but I know he'd cry. Aang bit his lip. Maybe he did, and we just didn't see it, he suggested. Kuzan was like that a lot. He was really private. Gyatso told me some people are just like that. He hunted in memory. Because Kuzan was from the old clans, and they don't talk much. And Gyatso had given him a look when he'd said it. The kind he sometimes used playing Pai Sho. Pay attention. There's a move coming you won't see until it's over. Only right about then, Kuzan had shown up with Shidan. Clear gold eyes, obviously putting aside whatever it was he'd gone off upset about. Which was weird. He couldn't have had a chance to talk to anybody. But the sky was great, and they were going flying, so what was the problem? Maybe, Sokka admitted. I'm still not that kind of guy, and I'm not the kind of guy you think I am, either. None of us are. Rummaging in his bag, he pulled out Boomerang. I'm going to take a wild guess here, and I need you to tell me if I'm right. You think hunting is wrong, the same way you think killing people is wrong. Killing people is wrong, Aang objected. But you're not. You don't. How could he say this and make it come out right? I know the water tribes hunt. You're not monks. You live on the ice and, well, sea prunes. Though seaweed bread's pretty good. I don't know why you don't eat more of that. There's never a lot of it, Sokka shrugged. You could gather all spring and summer and you still couldn't feed the village. Grand-grand says you'd get sick if you tried. Winter melts the fat right off you. People who don't hunt can't live at the poles. He fingered Boomerang's edge, just before the knife-sharp blade. But it's kind of all tangled up together, right? You respect life, so you don't want to kill anything, or anybody. Right. Aang blew out a breath of relief, ruffling the bushes on the other side of the clearing. Sokka got it, and he wasn't mad. Whew. If you don't respect life, well, you'd never be like Azula, but just look at the Fire Nation. How can they live like that? Azula's a lousy hunter. Aang couldn't help it. He blinked at Sokka, not sure he'd heard right. But she was in Omashu, and then the ghost town, and Ba Sing Se. Sure, she showed up in Omashu, Sokka agreed. I don't think she expected to see us. Then she tracked Appa's fur, and then she was in the drill, and she knew where we'd be as long as the Fire Army was camped outside the walls. He shook his head. That's not hunting, Aang. More like hanging around the storage pits to kill weevil rats. Are we even speaking the same language? Aang implored the sky. Hunting, killing, what's the difference? Respect. Aang glared at him. How can you respect life if you're gonna kill it? If you don't, you're a lousy hunter. Sokka put Boomerang away. Maybe I don't always act respectful hunting around here, but I don't know what animals off the ice want for their spirits. So I just hunt and figure I'll say thanks later, if they let me kill them. If they let you? Aang shook his head, hoping some sense would rattle loose. You're human, Sokka. You're bigger than they are, smarter than they are. You ever seen an Arctic hippo? Sokka put in. The spirits gave us brains, Aang. Like they gave animals better eyes, better ears, teeth, claws. Arctic hippos can kill you. Easy. If you're not smart. Zebra seals have fangs that can shred you. A hunter has to have respect. He's got to know what he's hunting. Study it, be careful, and be lucky. And if you do all that, you get a chance to bring meat home so the village lives. He spread empty hands. I'm not asking you to go hunting, Aang. If the way air nomads respect the spirits is to not eat them, okay. But if you keep thinking people don't respect life when they do, you're not going to get why people are doing what they're doing. And that's like playing with blasting jelly. Sooner or later, it's going to blow up in our faces. He's right, Aang, Katara said flatly. Though I think we all get Azula just fine. She doesn't just not respect life. She's evil. Aang jumped, smiled weakly at the girls who'd just rounded Appa. Hi? I was kind of hoping you'd stay asleep. Uh-huh, that won't work. Start shoving Earth around and I feel it, Toph said bluntly. I don't know about hunting, but I gotta agree with Katara. Azula doesn't respect anybody. She'd risk killing a baby just to get her own way, Katara said darkly. A Fire Nation baby. And Mai just let her. I'm not sure Mai had a choice, Sokka said thoughtfully. If you're right, Toph, they have to do what the Fire Lord wants. Azula's his daughter. So? Aang said crossly. Not that he wanted to believe anyone could have risked a little kid's life, even Mai, who looked like somebody had carved her face out of sour ice. But there was one big hole in Sokka's idea. Zuko's his son. Zuko's banished, Sokka said bluntly. That's not usually as nice as what happened to Katara. He crossed his arms and gave his sister a sober look. In the Water Tribes, banished means you can't come back. No one can help you. No one will even talk to you if they can get out of it. He glanced back at Aang. I don't know how it works in the Fire Nation. All I know is what we saw. Azula got tanks and drills and all the help she had to have to take down Kyoshi warriors. Zuko had a ship and Iroh and that weird bounty hunter. That's it. Zhao had more to go after us with than Zuko did. Aang froze in place, staring at Katara. You couldn't come back? That wasn't a big deal. Before the war, people from other nations had told him that a lot. Go away and stay away. And maybe it wasn't nice, but there were always more places to go. More people to see, more creatures to ride, whether they liked it or not. But nobody would talk to you? That was horrible. That was like being dead. You did that? He whispered. For me? Katara swallowed dryly. Aang, Sokka cut her off. Don't answer that. Sokka, this was a private, manly conversation, and I'd kind of appreciate it if you two would head back that way and let the rest of it be private and manly. Sokka waved towards Appa's other side, blue eyes serious. Oh, sure. One day dodging rocks instead of ice, and you're incredibly manly. But Katara's gaze slid away from his, and she touched Toph's shoulder. Come on, they probably just want to be gross at each other. Try closing your eyes, Toph advised as they moved off. It's a lot harder to be gross when you can't see it. She jabbed a finger Sokka's way. But if earthworms end up in my noodles, I know just who I'm coming for. Aang grinned. Quit that, Sokka hissed as the girls went out of sight. You know I wouldn't do that to Toph. Sure I do, Aang agreed, still grinning. But does Toph know that? She'll know it when I tell her I didn't do it. Yeah, she probably would. Darn. Aang, Sokka looked suddenly serious. Don't ask Katara why she did that. Not unless you're sure you want to know. But she left because of me, Aang said, puzzled. Maybe. Maybe, Aang echoed, incredulous. She didn't want me to be alone, Sokka. She went penguin sledding with me. She wanted to help. She wanted to get to the North Pole and learn waterbending. Aang stared at him. That hurt. And it wasn't true. It couldn't be. I'm not saying that's why she went with you, Sokka said soberly. We're your friends and your family. But she's always wanted to be a waterbender. Even before Mom... He had to stop and shake his head. Look, people can have a lot of reasons for doing something. And the one you see isn't always the one they're thinking of, okay? Aang gulped. You mean, like we think the Fire Nation is just out to take over the world, but they think... He had to pause, lump in his throat. They think they're trying to protect themselves from the Avatar. And that just wasn't right. The Avatar was supposed to be the hope of the world. That's what everybody said. Well, almost everybody. I think maybe some of them started out that way, Sokka said thoughtfully. I'm pretty sure Iroh knows that's not what they're doing now. He glanced at Aang, fingers worrying the edge of his sleeping bag. And I think if Zuko really thought you were the bad guy, none of us would be here. Aang was already sitting down. Now he kind of wished he could fall down. But Appa was behind him, which made that kind of not an option. But Zuko wouldn't. I mean, even at your village with all that fire, he didn't want to hurt anybody. Not really. Aang rolled his eyes. So I don't get why he's all upset about one lie. He got tricky first. Sokka was silent. Curious, Aang eyed him. What's wrong now? Sokka dragged out Boomerang again, and this time banged his head against it. Aang, how did you know that? Master Airbender, remember? Aang reminded him. We just know. He frowned. Only Jet, I guess he really believed he was doing the right thing, taking out the dam. Or he did while he was talking to us. Gyatso said that could happen, that some people could just tell part of the truth and make themselves believe that it was all of it while they talked to you. I mean, I knew Gyatso was telling the truth about it, but it sounded so weird. You knew Zuko wasn't going to kill us. Sokka said flatly. Like Boomy, Aang shrugged. He wanted you scared, but he wasn't really gonna let you get crushed. He frowned. Chien Village, that was weird. The guys in prison told the truth, but that mayor, he just said whatever he wanted. Shouldn't it kind of be the other way around? Sokka was gripping Boomerang like the last branch before a cliff. You knew all the time Zuko wasn't trying to kill us? His jaw worked, and he tried not to sputter. Do you have any idea how hard that must have been? Aang looked at him dubiously. Killing people is supposed to be hard. It's wrong. That's not what I... Ugh! Sokka banged his head against his weapon again, made himself breathe, mumbling something under his breath that sounded like the crackles of burning blubber jerky. Of course you don't, Sokka sighed at last. You don't hunt. You never had to worry about. If you miss, you don't eat. Your family doesn't eat. He counted silently under his breath. Aang, Zuko was hunting us. Aang gulped, flashing back to a tent, and Iroh's solemn advice about dragons. He was going to eat us? Sokka blinked at him. He said great names were like dragons. Sokka smacked himself in the forehead. Well, he did, Aang protested. Yeah, Iroh also said they just chew on people. Kill, not eat, Sokka said practically. If the Fire Nation actually ate people, I think we'd have heard about it. Oh, yeah. People said all the other evil stuff the Fire Nation did. Killing, burning, stealing, everything. If that happened, well, somebody would have told them. But you said Zuko was hunting us, Aang pointed out. To catch us alive, Sokka said bluntly. Grand-Gran said sometimes waterbenders would send people on quests like that. Hunt, don't kill. Bring it back for the moon and ocean to bless. It's hard. He looked straight at Aang. It proves you respect the spirits and your prey, that you know them. So? Aang said, uneasy. He didn't like where this seemed to be going. So, that's why I think the Yu Yan might be in the Fire Nation when we invade, Sokka stated. If Avatar Kyoshi can make a Fire Lord, you can stop one. And Ozai's not going to just let that happen. Blue met Gray, sober. Zuko learned about airbenders to hunt you, and he stayed on our trail across the world. He had to learn that from somebody. Aang started to protest. He wasn't sure what. Maybe that Zuko couldn't have learned that much if he'd never caught them, so they stayed caught. Stop. Glanced away from Sokka and tried to think about what his friend had just said. Somebody taught Zuko to hunt me. Somebody taught Zuko about airbenders. And Sokka said hunting was about respect. Respect and trying to keep the people you cared about alive. Aang? Sokka frowned at him, worried. The world's really broken, isn't it? Aang said, a little shaky. If what he thought was right... Yeah, it is. Sokka raised curious brows. You thinking about something specific? When Zuko broke me out of Zhao's fort, the Yu Yan knocked him out, Aang answered, thinking of a fierce blue mask, the shock of a familiar scar. I hid him in the forest and waited till he woke up. I wasn't sure he would. And I asked him if we'd met back then, before everything, could we have been friends? I'm gonna guess he said no, Sokka said wryly. He threw fire at me. Close enough, Sokka shrugged. But he didn't try to chase me, Aang went on. I don't know why, if he could get up at all, but... He swallowed. Or maybe I do. Before I knew who he was, I told him you guys were sick, that you needed those frogs, and you say he's just after me. Oh, man, Sokka said softly. But it kind of doesn't matter why he did it, Aang gulped. I asked the wrong question. You did? I was thinking about Zuko back then, Aang nodded. I should have thought about Kuzan now. It was hard to think about people from the past. Only a few months ago for him, they'd all been alive and happy and real. Now they were gone. Just ghosts. He'd be one of the good guys, Sokka said firmly. Like Zhang Zhang. Boy, I hope not, Aang said sadly. I mean, I wouldn't want him to be a bad guy, but Zhang Zhang hates fire. All he sees is how it hurts people. And Kuzan? He wanted fire to make things better. Aang swallowed. And maybe he could. I saw him with green fire, Sokka. He turned a pleading gaze on his friend. Why didn't he trust me? I don't know, Sokka said thoughtfully. But I'm gonna find out. You, huh? Aang exclaimed. It's important, Sokka insisted. Iroh knew about Kuzan. Iroh knew he was looking for you. And if Kuzan knew about healing fire, when the rest of the Fire Nation thinks it got wiped out by Kyoshi... He cut himself off, mouth in an unhappy line. Sokka? Aang frowned. I don't want to get your hopes up. Hopes? Aang echoed, almost a whisper. Because there was something odd in Sokka's face. Like, just before he came up with a risky, incredible plan. Kuzan was your friend, Sokka said honestly. I didn't really think about that. The Fire Nation's been the enemy so long. And even if he was your friend, how could one kid get from the Fire Nation to anywhere? His smile went wry. But he had a dragon. Well, yeah, Aang nodded. He'd come and visit me at the temple all the time. Words died in his throat, and he stared at Sokka with a weird, wild flutter in his heart. He was your friend, and he never stopped looking for you, Sokka said plainly. And I don't think it was for the Fire Lord. He stared into the night, nodding as he fit bits of fact together like a spider fly spinning a web out of thin air. He had to know it was dangerous. That the Fire Lord might catch him, but if he knew about healing fire, he was already hiding stuff from the Fire Lord. Aang swallowed. You mean, Kuzan had a plan? Sokka shot a startled look at him, as if he'd just put it together himself. How fast was Shidan? Kind of depended on the weather, Aang answered, surprised. Sokka worried about the weirdest things. And how far we were going. Appa's faster if it's a calm day, But if she done caught a warm wind or if it got stormy, why? If you're fast enough to be where nobody thinks you can be, you can pull off a plan everybody else thinks is impossible, Sokka stated. Aang, this is something else you need to know about families. Kuzan wasn't just your friend. He would have felt, man, how do I say it? Responsible. Gyatso was the closest thing you had to a father. Those kids you grew up with, like your brothers. If Kuzan couldn't help you, he would have helped them. Aang winced, fighting the urge to cry. But you saw Gyatso. Yeah, Sokka said softly. And a heck of a lot of firebenders. Grown-ups, Aang. I didn't see any kids' skulls. Not one. Aang held still. For a moment, he couldn't even breathe. I don't know what he tried to do, Sokka admitted. I don't know if it worked. 100 years, anything could have gone wrong. But I talked to the mechanist. I had somebody to talk to about what we saw at your temple. And I figured he must have been in on seeing your people got burials. Sokka swallowed. He found firebenders and kids' bones. A lot of them. Air, Aang told himself, as if from far away. You've got to breathe. Aang, Sokka gave him a sober look. I knew Gyatso knew they were coming. He couldn't have, Aang whispered. He would have gone if he knew. He'd be alive. Not if there was something more important than just living, Sokka said quietly. It's what my dad would do if people were trying to kill us. He'd stay behind and fight. He didn't want to hope. Not after what he'd seen in the temple, what he'd had to accept. It hurt. But if somebody else got away, where? Anybody who made it must have found a hole and pulled it in after them, Sokka said bluntly. Tio, his dad, they wouldn't have lived making those gliders if the Fire Nation hadn't wanted them protected. He shook his head. I don't know, Aang. I don't have any evidence. All I've got is what we didn't see. He paused. There's just one thing we know for sure. Kuzan was Zuko's great-grandfather, and Zuko doesn't give up. And if Sokka and Katara were right, and people in a family were like each other, you think Kuzan didn't give up, Aang gulped. I don't know what to do. I almost wish you hadn't said anything. I know. Hope is hard, Sokka said seriously. Just ask Katara. He eyed Aang. Maybe there's somebody left. Maybe there isn't. The point is, people tried. Regular people. Like me and Katara and Toph and Suki. Like Dad and the whole tribe. And we're still trying. He waved at the night. Yeah, the world's broken. We'll fix it. Not today. Maybe not in 100 more years. But we're not beaten until we quit trying. So we lost Ba Sing Se. For now, we've got us and my dad and the fleet and all the friends we've made on the way. We can still do this. So, you believe in the Avatar after all? Aang said, half to himself. No way, Sokka snorted. Aang's jaw dropped. I believe in you. Huh? Aang managed. I believe in the kid who was smart enough to trick Katara into penguin sledding, Sokka said seriously, who was crazy enough to ride the Unagi, who had the guts to save Zuko. Man, I can't believe you saved Zuko, instead of letting Zhao grab him. He smiled wryly. That's what's really going to save the world. Sure, we need plans and weapons and benders strong enough to stop the Fire Lord. We need to fight, and it's not going to be pretty. But after that, we need you. Aang swallowed, trying to follow where Sokka was going. The Fire Nation, some of them are just fighting for their families. If we can get them to stop, everything else gets simpler. Sokka nodded. You got the Mechanist to change his mind about the war. We got Haru's people to change theirs. Maybe, just maybe, we can change a few more. Aang shook his head. Toph says going against the Fire Lord can kill them. Yeah, so I kind of doubt they'll fight with us, Sokka agreed. But Captain G just bent the rules not to take Dad's fleet on. Maybe we can't get them on our side, but if we can get some of them to not fight... He spread empty hands. Yeah, Aang thought, turning that over in his mind. Yeah, just maybe. You think I can do that? I think you're the only guy who can, Sokka said soberly. We lost Ba Sing Se. I know you hate that. We all do. But for now, we have to live with it. After we beat Ozai, then we can come back and kick Azula's... He trailed off, eyes widening in horrified amazement. Oh, no way! What? Aang pounced, worried. Sokka blinked, shaking his head as if to rattle something loose. Just something I've got to think about. He shook his head. No way. That'd be just crazy. What would? Aang insisted. I've got to think about it. Standing, he scooped up his bedroll. Maybe sleep on it. Crazy. It's gotta be. Could you check if Toph's still up? Aang said impulsively. I want to ask her something. Yeah, sure, Sokka said absently, almost tripping over one of Appa's paws. Sorry, buddy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, what? Aang wanted to demand. But Sokka said he wanted to think about it, and that it was crazy. And maybe when Bumi had talked about thinking like a mad genius, he hadn't just been talking about the Avatar. Or maybe he wasn't talking about the Avatar at all. Maybe he was talking about me, Aang. Which was kind of confusing. Guru Patek had said he had to accept he was the Avatar. People looked up to him because he was the Avatar. The Fire Nation was afraid of him because he was the Avatar. But Sokka said he was Aang, that he shouldn't feel guilty for what Roku and Kyoshi did, or hadn't done. Just what he did. And Katara said that maybe he hadn't been there when the temples were attacked, but he was here now and doing his best. And Toph? Make a plan. Then move, Twinkle Toes, she'd say. Earth listens and waits, sure, but when we hit that right moment, we move. All of that had something in common. He just had to figure out what. Toes drumming night cool ground, Toph felt Aang shift, as if he'd decided. Nodded to herself, and walked around where she guessed Aang could see her. So, what'd you figure out? Now, Aang stated. You all want me to think about now, not the past, not the future. He didn't sound too happy about it either. Not what Gyatso taught you? No, he hesitated. Not exactly. Before the elders told me... You have the freedom to fly. You have to be in the future, where the wind's going to take you. Now's not supposed to matter. Toph wiggled a finger in her ear. I kind of hear a but. After they told me I was the Avatar, Gyatso said we couldn't worry about what was. We had to deal with what is. He sounds like a good guy, Toph nodded. But that's not the way airbenders are supposed to be. Ouch. That sounded like just a whine. But the way she could feel Aang curling in on himself and trying to hide it. He's really hurting. And she could tell him he wasn't the only one. That he wasn't alone. But I promised. And would it really help to tell him Zuko was hurting the same way? That a firebender was trying to wrap his mind around water? And that Zuko hadn't run out of time because of Katara at all? I don't know. so start from what she did know. It's like a rumble. Everything's like a rumble to you. The earth shivered. This is real, Toph, not some fancy earthbending contest. Just figured that out, huh? Toph said tartly. Okay, let me clue you in on part of my life that's not a rumble. You know, the part where my parents have all kinds of guards, so nothing could get in to hurt me. But they don't even tell our neighbors I exist. Nobody treated me as someone real, Aang. I wasn't in anybody's debt books. Nobody made deals with me. Everybody made deals around me. A rumble was the only place I could be me. You think earthbenders are supposed to be like that? Toph. The world isn't like your temple, Aang. Okay? I'm sorry, but it's not. Toph gulped a breath and tried to let her temper sink back down through her feet. Too much time with Sparky. I'm really sorry, she said more quietly. A thought hit her, out of the blue as one of Katara's snowballs, and Toph groaned. Oh, man. I am sorry, Aang. Think about something. Gyatso started telling you different stuff after the elders told you you're the Avatar, right? Yeah. Toph blew away stray bangs and nodded. So, what if he didn't know till then either? Silence, disbelieving at first. Then, slowly, she felt the tension drain out of him. But I was still me, Aang stated. I didn't change. Yeah, but you're not just an airbender, Toph said practically. After Gyatso knew you were the Avatar, he knew you'd have to learn the other elements. And we're a lot more grounded. More now. He promised it didn't make a difference. Fed up, Toph kicked a rock at his head. Stone crumbled against a defensive fist. What was that for? Crossing her arms, Toph cocked her head. You're not the guy who's supposed to have a head like a rock. Come on, Aang. What if I wasn't born blind? What if one day I just woke up and couldn't see? Would you hand me posters to put up? You didn't change. What Gyatso knew you could do changed. Quiet. Almost scary quiet. If she hadn't been able to feel his breathing. A little fast and a little bit of an upset hitch in it. But he was still there. So, Toph let out a breath. You're Aang, and you're the Avatar. I wish somebody could help, that there was somebody who could tell you what you were supposed to do. But we can't. You've got to figure out who you're going to be. She paused. Though, I kind of think you should look at what Kyoshi did and try something else. More breathing. Slower now. Good. He was thinking. Something rattle-stomped yards away, and Toph grinned. Hey, don't give it a name! Toph closed her lips on boots and cocked an ear Aang's way. Why not? I don't know. Toes drumming the ground out of rhythm with the frustrated little spirit. Toph waited. You said I should look at what Gyatso taught me after. Aang rocked a little in place. He started reading some new scrolls, spirit tales, with benders in them. That's kind of what I was trying with Hey Bye, only in the stories, spirits listened to benders right from the start. The villagers already called it the Hey Bye spirit, or I wouldn't have called it anything. Maybe Elder Uncle. Aang allowed thoughtfully. They like that sometimes. But you don't give spirits names. Things can happen. What kind of things? Toph asked warily. The stories were all different. That was not the sound of a happy airbender. So sometimes it's bad? Toph asked. Yeah, Aang said quietly. I know they're just stories, but... Okay, Toph nodded. Okay? Boots rattled the ground, indignant. So they're just stories. The Avatar's stories, too, Toph pointed out. Gyatso was your teacher, and he sounds like a really good guy. If you think he was warning you about spirits, I'm listening. But I don't know, Aang protested. Sokka didn't know how to take down that drill when we first ran into it either, Toph shrugged. Sometimes you gotta make it up as you go along. She turned towards the thumping and scuffling of an indignant spirit. Sorry, but till we can find somebody who can tell us, well, you want to be friends, right? A put-upon scrape of earth. We don't know who to ask, Toph pointed out, unless you know where to find a shaman or somebody. A thoughtful patter that slowly faded into the night. You think I'm right? Aang sounded hopeful. Ugh. All I know is I don't know, Toph said bluntly. So I'm gonna act like it might be trouble. Which it could be. She'd been worrying about Zuko dropping a boulder or two on Aang. This could be it. Might not even matter if it went after all of us. Sparky wants Aang pounded. He knows Katara hates him, and he knows Sokka's gonna be right behind her. And he knows I can take care of myself. She didn't think Zuko would be that sloppy. Zuko hated hitting things he didn't aim at. But he was really mad at Aang. He might not know much more about spirits than we do, even if a couple tried to eat him. Anyway, you bent it. It couldn't hurt not to call it boots, she hoped. Get some sleep, Toph advised. Heading back around Appa. We've got rocks to break in the morning. Okay. Blankets. With just a little dust scattered on top so she was sure what to grab and pull back. Toph? Sokka whispered. Growling under her breath, Toph crawled under the covers. Going to bed. Right, keep it quick. I know this is going to sound crazy, but I was thinking of some of Grand-Grand's stories. The old ones, where the chief had more than one son, and the kind of messes that could happen. Sokka cut himself off and took a deep breath. Is Zuko crazy enough to break back into Ba Sing Se? Toph blinked, wiggled a finger in each ear, checking her memory against Sokka's voice. Nope, she'd heard right. Whoa. He would... Sokka sounded dazed. Why? Can't tell you, Toph almost said. Except she could. Some of it. Duh, he's Lee. Amaya's his tribe. And Uncle loves her to pieces. And maybe just a little more. There's people there he cares about. You think he's just gonna leave them for crazy blue fire to grab? And if he does mess with her plans, maybe she doesn't look as good as the heir after all, Sokka said thoughtfully. I almost wish we could help. You do? Toph blurted out. I don't like Zuko, and I don't trust him, Sokka said grimly. But Azula's worse. He sighed, setting it aside. If Aang went back there, he'd want to free the whole city, and I don't think we can. So we're just gonna have to live with whatever the jerkbender pulls off. His tone softened a little, reluctantly. Or doesn't pull off. He'll make it, Toph said firmly. Turtle seals, Sokka shot back. And he made it then, too, Toph pointed out. I'm okay, Sokka. I know what we've gotta do. Teach Aang and beat the Fire Lord. I made a deal with you guys, and I'm gonna stick to it. It's just, I know he's your friend, Sokka admitted. And I trust him, Toph nodded. He's gonna stay alive, or I'm gonna kick his butt. You hear that, Sparky? Stay alive! Man, I wish I knew what was going on in Ba Sing Se. Green flickers playing across her hair from the fireplace of what had been Long Feng's elegant meeting room, Azula regarded her assembled Dai Li. Off to one side, Dai Li tried to hide she was biting her lip. Don't think I'm up to this, do you? Azula mused, trying not to smirk. I know you're looking for a healer, but I'm not that weak. I can handle treachery like this in my sleep. Father would expect no less. Our target is about to move, Azula announced, saw Tylee flinch at naming Mai a target, and almost chuckled. Suzuran will be here tomorrow morning, Azula went on. Our target knows there's a possibility of recruiting aid from that ship, but that would take time. The more time I have, the more likely it is Mai will not succeed in her ultimate goal. She cares about Mean Wen. She will take any risk to see him out of my hands.
She barely knows the boy, Princess, one of the agents protested. She's visited him, yes, but...
Agent Chan, Azula eyed the Tylee almost mildly. Mean, unfortunately for him, was in a position to save her life when she chose to defy me. Mai is Fire Nation. She is strongly bound to him. But not to me. Damn him. She'd make him die for that. Slowly. Later. Even if she weren't, by now she realizes I know she's a traitor. If she has any concern for that boy at all, when I break him, she knows who will be her executioner. Oh, what a sweet little thrill of fear from her spirits. Good. Good. Longfeng and now Quan. Too many if the Tylee underestimated her and what she would do for her people. Never again. Mai won't wait for Suzuran, Azula continued. She'll strike tonight.
We can increase the guards, John began.
That won't be enough, Azula cut him off. At this moment, with the smallest diversion, Mean could stroll right out of his cell and disappear.
Impossible, another agent sputtered. Those cells are inescapable. We searched her thoroughly. There's no way she could have passed him so much as a nail file.
You searched her and found nothing, so you assumed there was nothing to find, Azula said sharply. I never choose my servants lightly. Mai is as trained, deadly, and clever as anyone in this room. Except me.
Princess, Chan bowed. If you know her, what could she have gotten past our guard?
I can only imagine, Azula said dryly. What it is doesn't matter. Mai would never leave an escape to chance. She would never count on being able to fight her way in. Which means she has discovered some way for Mean to free himself.
She nodded.
Later this evening, past sunset, she may wait until the ghost watch. Mean will be ready to escape.
One sleeve padding the loop of diamond wire so it wouldn't cut into his fingers as he sawed, Mean drew one more subtle stroke across the inside of the bolt holding his cell shut.
Think that should do it. Tucking the wire back into his sleeve, Mean touched the door, reaching out with his chi.
You couldn't bend metal, everyone knew that. But Tingcha had shown him something interesting years ago, back when he'd still been a child excited by everything his father did, whether it won the war or not.
Just a piece of rust, hmm? Tingcha had smiled at his disappointed look, then laid the old dagger back into its hole in the excavation. Feel that. Don't bend the earth. Just feel. And he had, mouth dropping open as he finally realized what his father was trying to show him, that there was a rainbow shading of difference between earth and the heart of steel. With rust like that odd green flash between sunset and dark. Nobody could bend metal, but if you listened, if you worked at it, you could bend rust. And all metal rusted, even the polished steel of his cell. It wasn't much, not even as much as the diamonds on his wire, not nearly enough to use. But he could feel it. And feeling rust, he could judge how thick metal was inside it, and listen to it so he knew exactly when to cut enough metal that the door bolt held on the outside, and no more. The hinges had been trickier,
They were on the outside of the door, of course, meaning he not only had to steal time when no guards were looking at his cell, but he had to bend the diamond on the wire itself, forcing it to saw as firm as steel when by rights it should have flopped like a limp noodle. He had to wryly thank the spirits that they'd left him locked in here. Food in, chamber pots out, through the hatch and the door. If anyone had actually opened the door, well, he wasn't sure the hinges would hold. Blowing away metal dust, Mean snuck back to his cot, wrapping chains around himself to hide their cut ends, and shivered. For the past few days, he'd been focused, busy. Now all there was left to do was wait, and hope Mai got there first. Of course, he'll need a distraction, Azula observed her Dai Li again, and that's where your confined spirits come in.
Our what?
Someone in the crowd sputtered. Agent Chan raised a hand slightly, and the sputtering subsided.
Princess, I know we somehow missed the sandal spirits.
That was no accident, Agent Chan. That was a trial run. Azula narrowed her eyes, weighing the man. He might do, perhaps. Agent Quan arranged that to test our defenses and see how much it would take to overwhelm them. Horrified silence. But Chan lifted his head to meet her gaze. Hazel eyes serious.
Princess, you suggest that Agent Quan could use spirits against the ruler of the city?
He shook his head slowly.
That is difficult to believe.
He will, Azula stated, confidence ringing in her voice. I know the eyes of a man with nothing left to lose. Of course, she'd taken it all from Quan herself. Details, details.
So we should arrest him now, Your Highness,
Chan replied, outwardly calm.
Before any harm is done.
And leave you with doubts of following me? I don't think so. Agent, I would hardly condemn a man simply for the look in his eyes.
Which was such a blatant and unrelenting lie.
But it was exactly what they wanted to hear, so they would believe. So much fun. He is your current commander, and you need proof, Azula said with utmost sincerity. I have full confidence in your ability to contain the situation so we can get it. She inclined her head. We'll start by reducing the outer guards of your spirit maze. Dai Li, protect the city. It started as a whisper in Quan's brain, the moment he'd first made plans with Mai. In these dark corridors below the palace, it'd grown to a howl, all but deafening him to outside threats. He pushed it aside then as he pushed it aside now. There were advantages to knowing how mind-bending worked, especially your own. Dai Li, protect Ba Sing Se. Snarling, Quan slashed an earth-gloved hand down, slicing a spirit ward with the stone that had formed it. Shuddering half through, his own arm rebelling at the thought of sabotage, of treason. Dai Li, protect the city. Mind carefully blank, he finished the cut. Felt the pulse of malevolence as Kamui sealed into the chambers further inside the maze, tested their limits. Dai Li, protect Ba Sing Se. Not this night, Quan gritted out and kept moving. There were guards. Rather, there had been guards. Before the gold-eyed shadow drifting behind him had lashed out with a hiss of steel and venom. They'd never seen it coming. He stepped past limp bodies, avoiding accusing eyes. Had to smile wryly despite himself. Guards and lock and wards, yes. The maze of tunnels here had them all. So captured Kamui would be held and purified and consoled, until finally restless spirits were satisfied and drifted back into the other world where they belonged. Save that dark night of the last Earth King's murder, nothing had ever broken out from here. A pity the Dai Li had never considered someone breaking in. Breaking your contract with the city, part of his soul shrieked. Yes, Quan whispered, trying to catch his breath just before another barred gateway. I am. I know what this will cost me. I just don't care anymore. Not if he could shatter the Fire Princess's plan. If he could hurt her the way she'd cut his heart out, murdering Long Feng. Hurt her the only way that mattered to that monster, smearing her perfect victory. A shadow flickered and he didn't move fast enough. Stone ground up, trapping his feet, climbing. Darts whistled past his head and an ancient dropped. Mai leapt past in the next eye blink, knives pinning the Dai Li's partner to the wall in a scream of steel on stone before she drove a dart into his shoulder. Breaking himself free, Quan winced. Reclaiming her knives, Mai cast a dark look his way. Focus. I'm trying. Quan shook away the weakness, mind still screaming. I'll last long enough. I must. Mai eyed him narrowly, almost spoke, shook her head, deliberately leaving his word unchallenged. You said there would be more guards. There should be. Gold met dark, and he sensed more than saw her nod. Wherever the other Dai Li were, they'd find out soon enough. It was odd, Quan mused, as they slid yet another pierced steel gate aside. Most people would assume a Dai Li prison would be all sculpted rock, impenetrable without earthbending. Most people have never dealt with Kamui. Dai Li were expected to sacrifice themselves for the city, certainly, but not without reason. To perish at a spirit's hand simply because they drained you of chi so you could not bend? That was a stupid, stupid reason to die. So, Dai Li prisons for people might need earthbending to escape. Their prisons for Kamui needed none at all. Carved from stone, yes, it was, but pierced with tunnels and gates in a way that made it a spirit maze all by itself. A maze he was deliberately weakening with every gateway crumbled, every ward slashed, every strategic hole punched in a wall. Not too weak, please, Guanyin. But he needed revenge. Spirits, he needed it. The whole Earth Kingdom needed vengeance for Azula's violation, capturing the heart of who they were, meaning to twist it from earth to fire. He'd never hated anyone the way he hated now. It boiled in him, seethed like the acid mud springs legend placed in the Si Wang Desert. Seared even the circling light of mind bending, giving him just enough room to keep his promise to Mai and to the hapless young earthbender who trusted him to protect his family, even if it cost him every other promise broken. And perhaps that was Guanyin's will, hearing his plea for mercy. How could it be anything but a blessing to perish? Far, far better that than surviving, with hate eating away morals and conscience and compassion until he was willing to do this. A merciful death, but not yet. He counted corridors as they sped silently through the maze. Second left. Third right, there. Not the heart of the maze, no. Not that still guarded corridor where he could feel stone shivering, ready to answer Dai Li wills. But not moving. Not yet. You trained them well, Long Feng. More than enough Dai Li guarding the heart of the maze to take him and Mai both. More than enough. But they would not come. They'd hold their posts until the ghost fire itself consumed them. Dai Li here guarded no mere spirits of malice. What lurked behind those walls was nothing less than pure evil. Headless hounds, murderous ghost lion dillos, razor-fingered specters with smiles of blackthorn fangs, and more, countless more. Even some of those dark spirits that had been loosed decades past when all the royal family but Kuei perished. Hold your ground, men. I'm not mad enough to loose those on our people. Not quite. Cup hands and slam. Stone tore loose, carrying warding seal with it. Door after door in his chosen corridor wrenched free, screaming malice to the night. For a moment, Quan could only breathe, hearing the faint whisper of cloth as Mai followed their plan, turned and fled, could only feel like slime and frost on his soul, as Kamui after Kamui slithered, stomped, and rattled free. I've broken my contract. Breath sighing out of Quan, as a grinning Guuga Nu turned her eyeless skull his way, fleshless hands already reaching out. Here's as good a place as any. Warm hand seized his shoulder and pulled. Come on. He broke into a stumbling run, carried by steel and fire. Stupid. Can't die yet. Still have to open a tunnel. There. Stone crumbled, collapsing into darkness. Shock and horror on a host of faces. Move quickly, Azula told herself, flaring her inner fire to swamp that sudden blaze of defiance. They'll have been working with saboteurs, so they'll already have a way to lead the spirits to the prison cells. And to other places as well. Saboteurs won't help them simply because it's the right thing to do. Her voice dripped irony. A heartbeat for that to sink in, and she nodded at Ty Lee, who spread a map of the city for all to see, marked with various potential trouble spots. Azula gestured over several in the middle ring. The army barracks, where loyal Earth Kingdom soldiers were now confined, until such time as orders arrived to deal with them properly. The saboteurs will want payment in their freedom, or an attempt at it. She touched other spots in the upper and lower ring. You'll need to coordinate with the local guards and Fire Nation forces here as well. They'll use spirits, and their focus will be the barracks. But they'd be fools not to use purely human sabotage and destruction as well. In as many places as they can wreak it, trying to spread us thin. I imagine there will be several small localized earthquakes that just happen to hit innocent civilians, so they can claim we have no intention of rescuing them. The outer ring is on fire! A heartbeat of pure panic, that was all Master Sergeant Yakume allowed himself. The flames weren't right on top of their guard station, so he could afford an instant of terror. One moment to allow his soul to breathe, to simply be a man, angry and afraid. The next, he chained emotion with decades of discipline, barking orders that sent runners to city firemen and the nearest contingent of occupying troops. Captain Lu Shan was already snarling at his guards, leading them out to push onlookers back and knock on doors of tenements in the path of the flames. Once, only once, as they fought the flames all that heartbreaking night, would An Lu Shan give him a look. Blunt and uncompromising as granite. Did your people do this? But by then they'd found buildings collapsed from more than fire, and Yakume stared boldly back as they battled smoke and flames and time to drag civilians from the rubble. Did yours? How much damage will tell us a great deal about who was in charge of the sabotage? Azula mused. I rely on you to make concise and accurate reports, so we can find all of those responsible and restore peace to Ba Sing Se. Half-truths, the best lies of all. She never relied on anyone, but she did want peace in the city.
How could it be a productive part of the empire if it wasn't peaceful? Loot was well and good in its place, but it didn't last. Inhabitants would learn to hide what they could, and defiant fools would even deny themselves wealth rather than let any of it profit their enemies. Fools sell luxuries and buy training and fight. So few would. Better, far better, to have them pull in peaceful harness, tithing to the empire. Not as satisfying as looting and death, no. But in the long run, it was far more productive. And there was always someone stupid enough to burn alive. And once we track down this little plot, Ba Sing Se will be even more firmly in our grasp, Azula thought. Not only because she would have wiped out the troublemakers themselves, but because the citizens would see that their so-called leaders had done them harm and turn against them. Earth Kingdom fools. The Fire Nation would understand Lo War and hate us even more fiercely. Azula smiled to herself. I wonder which idiot of a general I didn't catch who came up with this plan. People are going to be hurt, aren't they? Seeking refuge away from the rest of the refugees in these small rooms some noble had sculpted in the cavern's heart ages ago, Earth King Kuwei scratched behind a sleepy Bosco's ears. The eyes behind polished glass were still young, but determined, and sad. Even if this plan Agent Shurong has helped us shape works, people are going to die. They are, Your Majesty, Agent Bone said plainly. I am sorry. I should have made a better plan, Kuei said almost soundlessly. I should have let one of the lesser generals make this plan. Bone cleared his throat. With all due respect, Your Majesty, no, you shouldn't have. Kuei shot him a narrow glance. I'm not a soldier, Agent Bon. I'm certainly no Tai Li. No, Your Majesty, Bon inclined his head. That's why your plan has the best chance of working. Kuei scowled, raising a hand to object. Stopped and thought. Slowly pacing across the carpet one of his grateful fellow refugees had donated to give bent stone chambers a sense of warmth and welcome. As almost everything within these walls had been given. Rugs, furniture, even an odd little water heating contraption tucked away in the next room to allow a sort of standing scrub shower. All gifts of Earth Kingdom refugees and of Fire Nation. A lord must have his dignity, Pei Born Maeda had said when Bon asked. Surprised, plainly, that the agent would even have to ask. His Majesty's not ours, but we're under his shelter. How can we not look after him? Here and now, Bon had to shake his head at the smith's honesty. All his years of service, he'd been taught that the Earth King needed walls and guards and Dai Li to preserve his life. Yet here, among people whose families were at least half the blood of the enemy, here my king is safe. Part of that feeling was based on rational facts. They were hidden, they had supplies, and they had enough earthbenders escaped from normal life or the army roundup to warn them if others were about to break in. But another part, one Bon winced to admit, was that he felt safe. These people are spirit-touched. All of them. Not as much as a Dai Li. Well, not most of them. But there was that faint sense of other about Amaya's people. And all the little things they did. Salt tossing and sake offerings and subtle patterns worked into clothes and wood and stone. My king is safe as they can make him. None of those small productions would stop a truly determined spirit. But little creatures, the more general fog of malice that usually breathed in the air when humans intrigued for power,
Those would not touch Kue. Not here. I don't know why I'm so surprised, Bon thought ruefully. Amaya chose to help these people, and she'd never had anything but goodwill towards our city. More pragmatically, Amaya might not be a perfect judge of character, but these folks were almost all from the lower ring. If they'd wanted trouble, they'd had plenty of chances. Those here now wanted to live quiet, peaceful lives in Ba Sing Se. And if they were wary of men like him, well, who wouldn't be, given what the Dai Li did? But they were only wary, not afraid. The Dai Li families, he and Shirong and a few other survivors, had smuggled down here on Quan's orders, fully expecting to have to guard them nearly as fiercely as the king. Those families were safe, welcomed. In a way, people as blunt as Maeda could no more feign than they could fly. Bon rubbed his aching head. Fire Nation refugees who wanted to help. Scrolls of healing, earth healing, discovered in their very own cache. And evidence that some unknown spirit had tampered with the Dai Li's own memories, so they'd missed that most precious treasure for Guanyin only knew how many centuries. Though, given they'd found that tampering after Kue had made his judgment, well, Bon had his own suspicions which spirit was responsible. The world isn't anything like I thought it was, like Long Feng told us it was, Bon thought, still a bit stunned. And if it isn't? He'd been in the ranks long enough to have heard the rumors. That some were Dai Li because there was Fire Nation blood somewhere in their veins, and mind-bending would never take. He hadn't wanted to believe it, of course not. But he couldn't deny that feeling of safety here. Of being, spirits, how odd, normal. It wasn't that fierce blaze, that pull he'd sensed near the Fire Princess. Azula, spirits. Azula was like a landslide he'd just barely struggled free of, to watch helpless as she carried most of the Dai Li away. Here among the refugees, it was like walking on one of the fields outside the Outer Ring. Burned after harvest. Ash on your feet, smoke lingering on your tongue, yet you could feel the strength returning to the soil. We have some of those farmers here. Bon shook his head. How much have they changed us? We thought we held all the traditions of the Earth City Kingdom. And yet, Water Tribe, Fire Nation, only threads woven into the vast loom of our city. But everything looks different now. Bon didn't know what it meant that Shirong had been adopted by the Wen clan. He definitely heard that word and tried not to think about it too hard. He wasn't sure he wanted to know. But you couldn't miss the change in the man. He seemed more solid, stable. Spirits, sometimes the man even smiled. And Shirong was out there now, risking that newfound sense of home and safety to rescue one boy, and carrying out the Earth King's plan. Kue had finally stopped pacing, eyeing Bon speculatively, as Bosco woofed and rubbed against a handy chair to scratch his back. They say the greatest swordsman fears not the second greatest, but the worst.
Exactly, Your Majesty, Bon said steadily.
We have an occupying force within our walls, Kue stated, working it out. Our officers have never trained for that. We call ourselves the Impenetrable City, and they think that way even when it's obvious we're not. The Dragon of the West broke the wall, and now his niece has brought it down. Bon nodded. But the Fire Nation, like Lady Mai, is used to fighting inside their own palaces, Kue went on. So any plan we've made, you and I and Agent Shirong and Professor Wen and everyone else who's helped, any plan like that, that she's willing to risk her life in,
stands a better chance than a plan made by those who depend on walls and armies and standing your ground at all costs. Bon nodded. I believe so, Your Majesty. He gave his king a sober look. Is he ready for this?
Homa and Shu, please let him be.
Sir, we are occupied by the enemy. The Fire Nation can now add our resources to their own, reaching out to conquer those who still resist. That resistance can either see Ba Sing Se try to act, no matter how rashly, or roll over and submit, helpless as a broken-legged Rabaru.
Kuei swallowed, briefly closing his eyes.
And I am the Earth King. I am responsible for more than just our city.
I'm not a general, sir, Bon said steadily. I never will be, but I know spirits, and spiritually, you are the heart of the kingdom. If you move against our enemies, the earth itself will feel it, and it will act.
He bent his head, aching for the young man in a king's robes.
Sir, if I may be blunt, even doing the wrong thing may be the right decision. So long as your people know you will not give up, they will have hope.
But my people are going to die, Kuei winced. My people!
We're at war, Your Majesty. Some of us are going to die no matter what happens.
Bon sighed. A commander cares about his people. Long Feng cared about us, sir. And he never threw our lives away. But he knew he might have to ask us to die. It's our job.
Those people up there aren't Dai Li, Kuei said quietly. They never wanted to fight.
But they are Earth Kingdom, Your Majesty, Bon said steadily. We believe in the Earth Kingdom, in our ways, our traditions, our king. Even, spirits, I never thought I'd say this, even Amaya's hidden Fire Nation folk believe in you. They have to, or they wouldn't be here.
He met those terrified, brave eyes.
They're not warriors. They don't want to die. But you are our king. You have to decide. Do we give up who we are? Or do we fight?
I think I could get to hate being king, Kuei said, half to himself, breathed out, and nodded.
We'll keep going. Guanyin have mercy on us all.
Bon nodded, trying not to let a rueful smile across his face. They'd all thought of Kuei as a helpless, naive bookworm who had to be protected for his own good.
Just as Long Feng intended.
But the Earth King had spent his life growing up with books, and the palace library was stuffed with the oddest texts. From growing silkworms to glass-blowing to tomes on extinct creatures of the poles that had once lunged into northern Earth Kingdom shores like furry cat gators. Every book printed in the kingdom since at least the 10th Earth King had a better than even chance of being tucked somewhere in that rambling pile of knowledge. Meaning there were plenty of books on Qin the Conqueror, and hordes of other military men, friends and foes alike, including spirits only knew where they'd come from, texts on the Dragon of the West himself. They didn't have a date, Kuei had said, when Bon started sputtering about that piece of information. I thought he was just another warlord in Qin's time. That's where they were shelved. Shelved by who? Bon dearly wanted to know. Certainly Long Feng wouldn't have put them there. Then again, given the odd contacts Amaya still had in the city above, contacts vital to the most fragile part of Lady Mai's plan, well, it seemed there might be more conspiracies in the city than just the Dai Li.
At least this one's on our side, for now.
You should get some rest, Your Majesty, Bon said gently. Worrying yourself sick won't help them.
I didn't worry about anything except tradition and the next ceremony for years, Kuei muttered. Look where that got us all.
Bon almost objected, frowned, thinking better of it.
That's an interesting silence. Tired, Kuei pushed up his glasses. If I'm wrong, I wish someone would tell me.
You're not wrong, Bon admitted. But you're not entirely right, either, Your Majesty. You are the Earth King. The traditions and ceremonies are important. Spirits need respect and veneration. And once in a while, a stern rebuke if they go too far. Ba Sing Se needs a ruler to handle the matters of this world, that's true. But without one of royal blood to perform the rituals for our city, we will die as surely as by the Fire Nation's flames. He winced. If you want honesty, Your Majesty, I've seen spirit-dealt deaths. I'll take the flames.
Kuei gave him the oddest look, took off his glasses and polished them on his sleeve, and propped them back in place. Agent Bon, are you telling me I need to get married? Bon froze. He hadn't said anything of the sort, but...
That's the pity of being an earthbender. If the ground opens up and swallows you, nobody thinks it was an accident.
Gathering his courage, Bon cleared his throat.
It would be wise, sir.
More, it could be vital. While Kuei had been safe in the palace, while the city had been safe, they could wait. Now? If Kuei dies, there's no one left of the Earth King's blood to hold the barriers. A chill shivered down Bon's spine. He'd been far too young on that moon-dark night to remember anything but screaming. But he'd heard the stories. And Shirong's infamous aura of doom was all the proof anyone needed.
I suppose that's why the noble ladies keep bringing their daughters to those parties, Kuei mused. I never knew if I should feel sorry for them or run screaming. Not that they were ever allowed to be close enough to run from, but... They never seemed as if they really wanted to be there. That's not how it should be. At least, Kuei looked a bit shy. I don't think it is. It didn't seem like the men and women were that way in The Princess of the Golden Cage, or Blind as a Badger Mole, or Love Amongst the... Kuei cut himself off, reddening at Bon's look.
Your Majesty, Bon said, with what he hoped sounded like curious calm.
Have you been studying marriage from romance novels?
Well, I didn't. I never. How does anyone ask about that? Kuei's flush deepened.
There are some married Dai Li, sir, Bon said seriously, trying not to laugh or cry. I'll find one of them.
Even if he had to drag them off watch and take theirs over himself.
So much for sleep tonight.
Sleep could wait. His king and his city needed this. Romance, marriage, and heir. None of these were trivial. Not for the Earth King.
And not for Kuei, Bon reflected, smiling a little to himself.
With a little reality abrading all the layers of books and ceremony, there seemed to be an honest-to-spirits young man shining through.
Oma and Shu, what a way to find him.
He only hoped that young man could survive the consequences of this night. But it doesn't matter who planned this little farce of a rescue, because it will be nothing but a miserable failure. Azula said coldly. One gesture with a sharp-edged nail and Tai Li unrolled another map. A floor plan of the palace, the grounds, and the underground prisons.
The most efficient and least detectable tunnel from the spirit maze will exit here. One floor above the prison cells.
Azula smirked.
And that is where we'll stop them.
It wasn't even a fight. Waiting for them in his own section of the tunnel, Shirong opened stone into the palace and latched onto Quan, freeing Mai to dive and throw and scatter paralyzed and knife-pinned Dai Li before her.
Then the spirits poured free. Bones sank claw-like into cloth and skin. Hundred-eyed Bai and Lian cast glares of madness, chittering like evil children, wispy as winding sheets. Mian Cheng rustled through the air, striking at necks to strangle.
"We're winning," Mai thought dizzily, as more agents fell. "We're going to make it."
Blue fire blazed, searing away spirit claw.
"I don't even have to hunt you down."
Azula stepped out of the shadows.
"How thoughtful."
"No."
Steel and chains and shivering. Not from cold. He wasn't cold.
"I want to see the sun."
Huddled on his cot in the corner, chains draped around him in case of visitors, Mean pressed his forehead against the back of his wrists and wished he could deny he'd ever thought it. He was an earthbender, born and bred in Ba Sing Se. So long as the air was fresh and the water clear, he shouldn't care if it was night or day, winter or summer, so long as there was earth. But there wasn't. Just a ghost of rust on steel and stray bits of other metal wrapped around his chi as far as he could reach. Just an awful, aching grief flooding him like ice water, old and ancient and somehow not his.
"I want to see the sun."
"What did you do when your own blood was the enemy?" "No, don't think that way. She wants you to think that way. If you hate Mom, you hate your clan, and then..." Mean shuddered, thinking of Azula's smile. She hadn't touched him, hadn't even come in the cell with him, but every day, at least once a day, she'd come to look at him, watching through the barred window with that subtle, knowing smirk. And every second she stood there, he could feel her prying at his soul.
"Come, come to me. I am strong. I will lead you, even through rage and fire. Come."
"No, and no, and no!" He'd chanted it under his breath, like a meditative mantra, trying to will away that awful feel of her,
leaning on that strength from elsewhere. It might be enemy blood, it might be Fire Nation, but spirits, anything was better than letting her take him.
"Oh, Ma and Shu, forgive me."
"Oh, Guan Yin, have mercy." He could all but taste what sunlight would feel like. Honey gold and warm, so warm, sinking into chilled bones, filling all the aching emptiness.
"She's killing me."
Mean blinked and breathed, trying to think past fear's chill to his father's old lessons. Benders needed their element to fuel their chi. An earthbender on a lake was as weak and vulnerable as a waterbender in the desert, or a firebender buried underground.
"I'm not a firebender."
But Jinhai was. And if what Su Yin said about her lessons was right, everyone used chi. And he was leaning on something of fire to keep that monster out of his head. "No earth, no sun. She's killing me. And she knows it." Mean closed his eyes, tears leaking. Stupid. He felt so stupid. He didn't want to be afraid.
"Courage is not the absence of fear, Mean."
Tincha's voice murmured in memory.
"True courage is to be afraid and accept it and do what must be done."
Maybe his father had known what he was talking about after all.
"Just like a university exam where you can't recall the answers, hmm? You've had your moment to panic. There's nothing wrong with panic. All beings do. What makes us human is thinking past it. Breathe, son, slow and deep. Be the mountain rising up. Breathe and think."
In and out. Clutch the diamond-dusted wire hidden in his hand and let himself feel that scattering of earth.
"It won't work."
Mean stiffened, chains on his arms rustling.
eyed the barred window where one of the Dai Li guards was calmly peering through. Ling, he thought this one was called. And what it said of a man that he let people call him Spectre. He couldn't have seen the wire, or the filings. He'd been very, very careful to blow them discreetly out of sight in the shadows. And they'd all behaved, almost like crumbs of soil. But that was silly. Everyone knew metal didn't bend. What won't work?
Your plan.
I'm chained in here while the Fire Princess takes over our city and tries to find my family so she can murder them, Mean snarled. Do you have a plan? Because I'd love to hear one.
Nice try. The guard looked darkly amused. Pity about that family boy. Things would be so much easier for you if we could just make you forget.
Mean shivered.
But if you are a loyal citizen of Ba Sing Se,
Ling's voice dripped sarcasm,
then you'll just have to suffer. Because if you are true, Earth Kingdom born, you know there are things the Fire Nation should never learn of.
He paused, deliberately.
So cheer up. You won't live to serve the Fire Princess.
She doesn't know what you can do with mind-bending, Mean realized. And you plan to keep it that way. A part of him found that oddly comforting. No. No, I am not going to die here. I'm not going to give up. Never give up without a fight.
Oma and Shu, it must be true,
Ling murmured, watching him narrowly.
You shouldn't have this much fight left.
That stung, even through the fear, deeper than Mean had thought possible. My father never stopped fighting you.
An archaeologist,
Ling said contemptuously,
and a professor's wife. You think your parents are going to chase the nightmares away and save you?
His lip curled.
Child, this is the real world. There are no miracles.
Wind moaned down the corridor, and every glowing crystal blew out.
1, 2, 3 little traitors, Azula mused, stalking in front of the bruised and bloodied figures chained before her. At least one of them had tested the chains. She'd heard the clink, but her Dai Li had sunk them into the audience room floor, and it'd take a more skilled bender than these rejects to free themselves with no slack to move his arms. Even if one tried, Dai Li was barely a breath away, poised to strike them down. Fitting to bring them up here, the Earth King's very throne room, where justice would be done. Her justice. The Fire Nation's justice. Same thing, really. She served the Fire Lord, and they all served Fire Lord Sozin's great vision. A Fire Nation as powerful as any Avatar. So powerful, it would never bend to the so-called will of the world again. And we are making that real. Here. Now. Gracefully seating herself on the throne, Azula smirked at the three on their knees. One ex-servant who'd survived treachery, one soon-to-be former Dai Li second-in-command, who didn't look at all well. She'd have to do something about that. He couldn't be allowed to die until she said so. And another Dai Li, last seen fleeing with her now-deceased brother. Azula's eyes narrowed as she shot out of the throne to stalk up to Shirong, stared at him, felt him. He feels like fire. Impossible. He was a Dai Li, an earthbender. Everyone attested to it. True, some of the agents might have Fire Nation ancestry, but he doesn't feel like that little fool downstairs. He feels like fire. What are you? Azula snarled. Lip torn, one eye already bruised and blackening, Shirong didn't even try to distract her.
You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Truth, she could see it, in that fey, steady gaze. A look that reminded her of
The crack of her slap shattered the silence. She stalked away, hands shaking with rage. How dare he look like Zuko, about to die and knowing it, and beyond any mortal doubt that he was doing the right thing. How dare he?
Where's Meen?
Anger glittered in eyes that should be cold, flat gold. Azula's fingers curled at the sight, eager to flay that still face open to the bone, that Mai would allow herself to be anything but the useful, courtly mask. You let him ruin you. Mai's head snapped up.
I have done nothing that would shame my clan.
You really think so? Azula said silkily. After you've defied your princess?
I sent a letter to my parents to announce loyalty reclaimed.
Truth, Azula could hear it. Impossible as it should have been for any letter to have left Ba Sing Se. So you've saved them and damned yourself. How very noble. Azula's lip curled. How very stupid. I let you be with Zuko too long.
You have what you want.
Mai's voice was level again.
Let Meen go.
The princess smirked. You know me better than that, Mai. Once I have an enemy in my grasp, I never, ever let them go.
Mai's face didn't change.
You do know me better than that, Azula mused, suddenly thoughtful. Why doesn't she flinch? She's lost everything. I've predicted her every scheme, countered every move. One of the servants' doors swung open. Leave us! Her firebolt seared off the end of the noble girl's ornate tortoiseshell comb, painting the air with smoke. I am not to be disturbed. The girl was made of sterner stuff, for a useless Earth Kingdom trinket. She dropped to her knees. Pale, but still conscious, holding out a folded fan with trembling hands. Ooh! Tylee bounced out of the shadows, face split ear to ear with an eager grin. It's for you! What? Azula said blankly. I've heard about this in the circus, Tylee smiled. You must have really impressed some cute guy. Azula shot the acrobat an incredulous sideways glance, unwilling to take her gaze off a potential threat. At this hour? Oh, of course, Tylee nodded, perfectly sincere. You don't send pillow poems in daylight. That'd be rude, especially if you already had a boyfriend, or 10. A boy! Fire blazed in Azula's hands, and she turned a furious gaze on the quaking girl. It's not her fault. Tylee was right beside her, worried and upset. She's just a messenger. Right. And the first rule of messengers was, don't incinerate them. Good messengers were hard to come by. Who sent this? Azula hissed. He... Shaking on her knees, the girl swallowed. He wore a mask. He probably signed the poem, Tylee put in. That's what some of the girls in the circus showed me. Good. Then his own arrogance would be his downfall. Throttling back her rage, Azula held out her hand. You'd better be ready to find another master, girl. Trying not to whimper, the girl presented the fan in both hands, laying it in her grasp as gentle as dandelion fluff. For a second, Azula considered stepping back. Even a terrified girl might be a threat. I will show no fear. The Dai Li, the Earth Army, they have no women among them. A useless waste of resources. Granted, the tactics Earth Kingdom generals used meant it wouldn't be wise to place most women in frontline battles, but you didn't need to be a man to drop rocks off a wall. Lip curled in a sneer, Azula opened the saffron-edged, mint-patterned fan. Overlapping robes should bring warm new beginnings, but you are still cold.
No signature. Azula frowned at the fan, puzzling at the meaning. The foreign but acid insult she could all but taste. Demure hands slashed up, and stone moved. And her fiery shriek caught nothing, nothing in its blast, for Ty Lee had pulled the girl away. Trapped in bent stone, Azula glared at the chi blocker. Traitor! No! Ty Lee actually sounded hurt. She dropped to her knees, prudently out of fire breath range. You're my friend. I'd never betray you, ever. She raised her head, tears in gray eyes. But you're hurt. You don't know how hurt. And you need a healer, more than anybody can do with herbs. I had to find you one. Idiot, Azula hissed. You think a healer in this city is going to do anything but kill me? I certainly want to. Stepping through the door, in green upper-class robes that matched the messenger's, the matronly woman's blue eyes were still unmistakable. Healer Amaya, Azula realized. So the weevil rats finally crawled from her den. I know some of what you've done. Amaya stopped by Ty Lee, weighing Azula in her gaze. And I can only imagine what you will do. The Ty Lee aren't stopping her. Azula twisted, skin rasping against stone, more furious than she'd ever been. They're loyal to me. Why aren't they stopping her? But if you die here, Fire Lord Ozai will make this city a pyre in your memory. Amaya said softly, circling out of Azula's view as she stalked nearer. And if I can stop that, I will. Her voice dropped. And when it comes to your life, my student, your brother, would move mountains to see you healed. No! You can't do that to me! You can't throw me on Zuko's mercy! Cool water touched her head, and the world went out. Like walking barefoot over knives. Reaching carefully through water and blood, Amaya coaxed fluids from swelling tissues, gently mending delicate capillaries. Spirits! It was amazing the girl was even standing, much less outwitting them as easily as Mai had predicted. You're Zuko's sister, after all. Too stubborn to lie down and die. Brain injuries were oddly easy and hard at once. There was nothing large to coax back into wellness, not like a broken bone or torn muscle. Everything that needed mending was small, delicate, intricately intertwined with everything else in the brain, so a slight imbalance here would cascade there and roar on to potentially ravage mind and spirit. But you are fire and the will to live. You will survive this. Shift fluid, heal, wait, reading how the storm of the mind flexed. Heal again. There. The physical damage was mended. Now for the tricky part. Eyes closed, Amaya reached beyond body and mind towards a keening flame of spirit. Zuko loves you. Flames spat and crackled, negation, denial. Hands pressing a pillow home to smother, an evil smirk shared with her father whenever she crushed her brother. A sad mother's face, whispering, monster. It scourged Amaya like acid, but she'd touched evil before. She would not let it win. He knows, she murmured to that dark spirit. He knows all of this, but he knows something more. You are his sister, and you are all the hope your father has left. Liar! Girded with water and spirit, Amaya forged into the inferno. She won't hurt a patient, Shirong said swiftly, as Azula gasped and Chan tensed. You know, Amaya, you know she won't. He nodded toward Ty Lee, about as much as he could move in such tight chains.
A life for a life means freedom for the princess's healing. That was the bargain.
Agent Chan relaxed slightly, though he gave the still-shivering Jia a dark look.
Does your father know you behave in such...
Not only do I know,
Tingcha said gravely, stepping through the door with Mei Shan close behind.
I thoroughly approve.
He bent to offer his daughter a hand, drawing her up to unsteady feet.
Well done.
I was so scared. Jia clung to him, tears trickling through perfect makeup.
Daddy! Shh, it's over now.
Tingcha stroked her hair, rocking her gently.
It's over.
Agent Chan raised an eyebrow. Xirong chuckled wryly, taking in Mei Shan's casual stance. That would have a blade through the first of the Dai Li to move.
I know a bargain to save Mean's life doesn't save ours, but I think you'll want to hear us out.
Letting go of Jia, Tingcha reached into his sleeve and produced a ribbon-bound scroll, presented it to Chan with a professor's rough grace. Unrolling the scroll, the agent read carefully, eyes slowly widening, face blanching as he glanced at the scroll's lower left corner.
A thumbprint in blood, Xirong knew. The Earth King's own mark.
Anyone in the Earth Kingdom must sign with a thumbprint. The marks Guanyin left on a person's fingers were unique, a reflection of the spirit and mortal flesh, but all agents knew their king's sign. Chan lowered the scroll, still pale.
He orders us to remain with the Fire Princess.
Those who feel they must, Xirong nodded. Ba Sing Se must be protected from malice. We can't do it if all of us are in hiding. You will serve your city with honor.
He swept his gaze over the agents in view.
But if any of you have doubts, if you would fight for our kingdom, even at the risk of being hated and hunted, the Earth King needs you. Desperately.
He met Chan's gaze again, all too aware of Quan's uneasy silence.
You'd be surprised how much he learned. Just in a few days. Bon seems to have given him some rough lessons in what it's like to be a Dai Li. He was startled to hear how the spirit's touch separates us from the rest of the world.
Quiet murmurs of disbelief followed that. Xirong shrugged.
Think about it. How would he know? He's been kept away from ordinary people his whole life. Whenever they do show up, they're always in awe because he is the king. Of course they're afraid of him.
Silence. A thoughtful silence.
Please let this work.
Chan cleared his throat.
There's also an odd order in here about the library. Apparently, the Avatar managed to offend he who knows 10,000 things,
Tingcha stated.
He did so to strike against the Fire Nation and restore balance to the world, but Wan Shi Tong does not seem to care. He's been stealing texts and documents that would help the Avatar ever since. One of his foxes took my form to steal a letter that would give the Avatar insight into who's tried to stop the war in the past, and how he might stop it in the future.
He spread empty hands.
If Wan Shi Tong wishes to harm the Avatar, the king wishes to stop him. He will spread knowledge to the four corners of the earth and hope we succeed.
He cleared his throat.
Personally, I think he'd also just like his books. He's holding up well, but he's as adrift outside the palace as any of you would be outside the wall. It'd be a kindness to follow that order.
Another long silence, as Chan looked troubled. Xirong shifted as much as he could, knees aching. Soaking in qi from stone helped, but his fellow agents knew too well how to bind someone in a painfully awkward fashion. The hairs on his neck went straight up as something glowed through the audience room floor.
Chains clashed and rattled, passing through ephemeral robes like so much jade mist, passing over the dazed boy sprawled on the floor, gasping for breath stone and spirit had denied him. Mean. Shirong didn't dare look closer. Not now. Not with jade mist robes whispering through air, drifting about a female figure whose unbound hair was peppered with ashes, and whose blind white eyes leaked tears. Falling to her knees before the empty throne, the spirit keened. Grief struck Shirong like a thunderbolt. No hope, no warmth, no life, nothing but gray chains of despair. All was set awry. Time itself was out of joint. They were grieving, had been grieving, would grieve forever. The palace is empty. No king dwells within these walls. The palace is lost, lost, a haunt for cat owls and creeping things to finally wear away as dust in the wind. The whale vanished. She vanished, leaving only poor, shattered mortals trying to breathe life back into their battered souls.
Che gu gong yo ling,
Shirong whispered, a spirit no Dai Li had ever trained to defeat, that no Dai Li had ever wished to see. She had not been seen in thousands of years. She who only appears if the imperial palace is abandoned, if no king rules here, Shirong recalled. The spirits will not recognize Azula as our ruler, no matter what the cost. Chains fell away from them, and Chan himself lifted Shirong to his feet. Take them and go, Chan said briskly. Go! Nodding, Shirong helped Quan upright, winced inside at the way Quan swayed on his feet. He's hurt. Badly. Not bleeding, but empty. Amaya took a deep breath and straightened. She'll live. The healer eyed Tai Li and Chan. Let her sleep. Try to give her a restful day so everything can settle. I've healed what I can. Her mind is whole, at least as whole as it ever was. She shuddered.
Don't say things like that. Tai Li flipped to plant herself between Amaya and the unconscious firebender. Azula's an amazing person.
Amazing indeed.
Amaya stepped back, still eyeing the princess, as if she were the deadliest white scorpion viper.
Twi and La, I would have drowned her in her very cradle.
Rubbing iron-chafed wrists, Mai's head jerked up at that.
She's not that bad.
No, she's worse. Amaya rubbed her hands over each other, face set and determined, glanced at Tai Li and shook her head.
I only hope that one day you see the truth.
And let's hope we're far, far away when that happens, Shirong thought grimly. Yet bleak as the thought was, bleak as their situation might still be, we're not safe. Not yet. We need to get moving. He still had to smile a little as a dazed mien pushed himself off the floor, looked at his parents and Mai and all of them, with awed, amazed hope. Tingcha nodded once, a proud smile on his own face.
Let's go home, son.
Losing him. Heal? Trying. He needs earth. They've all just started.
Go away,
Quan thought wearily, dimly aware of a hard stone table under him. Voices pleading, hands plucking at his robes, an oddly soothing grit of sand humming to itself as it pressed over his heart.
Just let me go.
He was a traitor, a contract breaker. All he'd done, all he'd hoped to be, was dust on the wind, and he wanted to blow away with it. I've had enough, failed enough, suffered enough. No, a young, familiar voice, though stronger and firmer than he'd ever heard it before. No, Agent Quan, you haven't. Not yet.
aching, Quan opened his eyes. The hands on him resolved into the most unlikely faces. Amaya, Shirong, Mean, Professor Wen, and spirits, was that Jia? At the head of Amaya's stone table, Earth King Kuei looked down at him with stern eyes. You followed Long Feng and betrayed me.
Yes,
Quan whispered. Why deny it? At least he could be true in death, if not in life. You helped Princess Azula occupy our city.
Yes.
You threatened Ba Sing Se itself by weakening the spirit prisons.
Yes,
Quan admitted quietly. And you think dying could possibly make up for that? Quan had to look away.
My death is all I have left to offer.
Oh, monkey feathers!
Quan blinked.
I need every trained earthbender we can save, Kuei said plainly. Even you, especially you. Who can better advise me how to fight these people than one who's faced the Fire Princess herself?
Quan shook his head minutely. I betrayed you,
Kuei winced. You betrayed a king who is in the middle of making a terrible mistake, he admitted, voice pained. Someone who'd always taken loyal service for granted, who'd read about what you are, what you do, yet never truly realized what it costs. Kuei swallowed dryly. I'm trying not to be that king anymore.
He narrowed his eyes, trying to look stern.
Am I your king, Agent Quan?
Yes, sir,
Quan whispered. Then accept my judgment.
Kuei's face softened as he touched Quan's brow.
I sentence you to live.
Quan's heart seemed to skip a beat. Almost, he could imagine a shimmer around the king, like air wavering over summer-roasted rocks, like the ancient tales of the kings who'd caught and married the wild enchantresses of the sands, bringing the strength of the desert into the very heart of Ba Sing Se. But that was ages ago. Impossible. It's not that easy.
On the contrary, young man. Professor Wen's voice was worn, but he looked wearily triumphant as he lifted a sand-dusted hand away.
I think you may find it is exactly that easy.
The earthbender stepped back, leaving Amaya clear to touch Quan's heart and head. Quan shivered. Amaya's touch didn't feel like water or sand or any element he could name. More like someone reaching inside his skin, sharing it just for a heartbeat. She lifted her hands away, relieved.
Rest, Amaya directed. Don't bend more than you must for at least a week. Your spirit is whole, but your chi is worn thin. Don't try to fight a spirit. Let other Dai Li handle it.
She paused.
And don't pray to any great spirits that aren't of earth. There could be consequences.
Shirong winced. Quan raised an eyebrow, absently wondering if he could muster the energy to sit up.
Consequences? Kuei asked, worried. It's difficult to explain.
Amaya glanced at Mean.
The same goes for you, young man. That metal starved you, and I know you could have been reaching for more.
Quan levered himself up, ignoring the dizziness. Shirong knew something, as did Professor Wen, and even Mean himself looked as though he'd put a few facts together.
We've imprisoned earthbenders in steel before,
Quan pointed out.
There have never been consequences, besides the usual. Despair, madness, death, a predictable progression.
Nothing that would cause any other healer he knew to advise not bending, if you escaped that fate. Professor Wen made a startled noise of comprehension.
Of course. Ritual starvation for a spirit quest. The texts say the shamans of old would do that to gain more power.
Power over spirits? Quan ventured. Amaya said he'd live, and he believed her. but the headache had him almost wishing he wouldn't.
They're hiding something from my king. I can't let this go.
Sometimes, Kuei spoke up, startling him, shamans are meant to deal with spirits. But sometimes, if their people need it, they'd seek other powers. To call down storms or quell floods or walk unharmed through raging fires. Behind glass, his eyes widened. Yauren! Of course! They were Yauren! You could have heard a pebble drop. They know, Quan realized, looking over the motley band of rescuers. They know what he's talking about. I'm sorry, of course you wouldn't know. Kuei waved it off. It's in the ancient books. They're the most accurate, at least any stories written after Avatar Yangchen. Well, they tend to confuse the Avatar's advisors with spirits in human form, or just imply the Avatar did it all, which is ridiculous. Even on a flying bison, how could the Avatar be in two places at once? And he shook his head, smiling ruefully. Never mind. Agent Quan, please follow Healer Amaya's advice. If the spirits decide to bring back a legend, I have no idea where to look for the spirit healer you'd need.
You could be one.
Kuei stared at Amaya. I'm not even a bender.
Not of the four elements,
the waterbender acknowledged.
But you are a spirit bender, Your Majesty. I felt you reach for Quan's when you helped us hold him to life.
She nodded.
I don't know how much time I'll have to teach you, but the basics of spirit healing I can show you. And I will.
Oh, Kuei said in a very quiet voice. That is, that would be... Thank you. Smiling, Amaya inclined her head. But even if she can teach me... Kuei turned to Quan. You'd need another teacher, and we have one waterbender and no firebenders we can trust. There's only one airbender anywhere. It wouldn't be wise.
A teacher?
Quan said warily. The Earth King couldn't mean what he seemed to be implying. Impossible. Kuei looked abashed. I know it sounds like something out of a spirit tale, but, well... Yauren are out of spirit tales. The Avatar's helpers. Benders who can mediate with some spirits themselves. Or fight them, like the Dai Li. Though they have an advantage, if they're trained. Because they can strike with two... Words died in Kuei's throat. As he turned a disbelieving gaze on Amaya. Li is Fire Nation. And a waterbender. Is he... He couldn't be... A silence of exchanged glances, and Quan knew. Every child of the House of Sozin was a firebender. Every last one. Yet if the reports of what had happened at the Wen House were true, hot water, possibly, but what firebender could bend ice?
Li is a Yauren, Your Majesty, Shirong said quietly, and... So am I.
A deep breath, and his hand cradled fire. Quan blanched, feeling the room sway around him. This can't be happening. It can't! Flames flickered out with Shirong's sigh.
As you said, we have no firebending master here. Li was teaching me, but I only knew what I'd become a day before everything fell apart. And Li... My apprentice drowned under my hands a little more than a month ago, Amaya said simply. He's worked hard to learn, even when he was terrified of what happened to him, but we haven't had enough time.
Terrified? Kuei objected. This is a gift from the spirits.
None of us knew that, Amaya said sharply. He was born a firebender, in a land whose idiot of a fire lord teaches every other form of bending is inferior. He was scared half to death.
Mushi barely found scraps of a tale that gave us a name for what had happened.
She shook her head. But we thought the spirits could only take a hand if someone were gravely wounded.
Well, those are the strongest Yaoren in the tales, Kuei managed, eyes still wide. The warriors, the ones the spirits set between us and harm. But the stories say some benders went on spirit quests to become Yaoren, though it was risky. You could die, even if you didn't, it didn't always work. And the ones who lived? Well, they weren't the ones you might expect. He gave Shurong a shaky smile. If spirit-torn Yaoren are lion dogs, questing Yaoren were cricket mice. They were healers. He rubbed his head. Lee is a Yaoren? He seems so young.
Was, Quan said soberly, heart aching for Kuei. He didn't know what the spirits had been thinking to give that kind of power to an heir of Sozin, but the Earth King had known only a young healer who'd tried to help.
Is, Shurong said simply.
No, not possible, Quan thought. He broke his loyalty. He had to act against the Fire Lord and attack his own sister.
Mien swallowed audibly, eyeing the adults as if he couldn't believe Shurong was serious.
Azula said he was dead.
Azula, his father said gravely, makes a mistake all too common among the most gifted. She believes that if she could not see a solution, no one could.
Don't underestimate her, Amaya shivered. I touched her spirit, not her mind, but she's a knife of glacier ice. Hard, sharp, focused. We dealt with her when she'd been blunted by injury, a blow that would have killed most of us, and left the rest of us delirious and raving. And she still nearly had us all.
The healer drew a breath, mastering her fear.
But your father is right. She may be a genius, but she still makes mistakes. Lee is alive.
And bringing us a ship. Shurong smirked.
A ship? Quan echoed, aghast. How? He's...
Shurong winked at him.
Exiled. Quan bit back, seeing pure mischief in Shurong's gaze.
What in the world are you up to?
A ship? Kuei looked dismayed. There's nothing in the plans about a ship.
Not yet, Shurong smirked. That's why we should sleep on it, Your Majesty. Tomorrow is going to be interesting.